listen to the stories of Tinseltown. We got a new song, and yes we do. So come on days, and come on months, and all you others too. Listen to the stories of Tinseltown. They're not only good, they're true. True stories of Tinseltown. Ooh, ooh.
Hey everybody, and welcome to another True Stories of Tinseltown. I have a great guest for you today, and it's fun for me. He is a huge Barbara Stanwyck fan, and Barbara is my favorite actress, although I love so many of them. Barbara really is the one that I just think is phenomenal. And the name of his book is Barbara Stanwyck, The Miracle Woman, by author, and who we are talking to, Dan Callahan. Thank you so much, Dan, for coming on the show. I so appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
I really liked the book. And, you know, we were discussing earlier how, you know, it's not really a true biography in a sense of Barbara's life, but it is, because so much of her life was her work. And you talk about certain things, and you discuss, of course, the Broadway, you know, her mother, how she died, and, you know, just coming up.
Yeah, life events.
Yes.
Right.
But mostly, you know, it's about her movies. And why don't you give us a start with Ruby Stevens, where she was and how she ended up on Broadway and finally ended up in Hollywood. And we can talk her movies and her life.
Sure. Yeah. Well, she was born in Brooklyn in 1907. I live in Brooklyn. And so when I was writing the book, I actually went over to where she was born, and it's all on Classon Avenue. And it was pretty rough when she was there. It isn't as rough now. I think there's a design school there where she used to live. When she was a child, her mother died very early. And the story is that a drunk hit her from a streetcar, like knocked her off the streetcar.
How
and
horrible.
She hit her head.
Stanwyck's father, wasn't she pregnant? Yeah.
Yes. And Stanwyck had a brother and she had several sisters. She had an older sister, Millie. And the thing is, her father went away and basically abandoned the children, to work on the Panama Canal. Mm-hmm. And so she was in and out of foster homes a great deal when she was young. And the only real stability she had was her older sister, Millie, who was a showgirl. And so to Ruby Stevens, you know, show business was the thing, because she really idolized her sister, Millie. And her sister, Millie, was kind of like a mother to her, and she wanted to please her. And so she went into that kind of work pretty early.
She
was basically teenager, and and her sister, you know, helped her to get jobs, and she lived with two other chorus girls, one of whom was Mae Clark,
who
if you remember, right, yeah, in the James Cagney movie Public Enemy, he smashes the grapefruit in her face. So she was living with Mae Clark and another chorus girl. And, you know, they were getting around, and then she was in a play called The Noose, and she had this one scene where, you know, she came out on stage and had a big, you know, big explosion. You know, she's pleading for the life of this man that she loves, you know, and it came in right at the point when it caused a big sensation. Everybody thought, who is this girl? What is this girl with all this talent? And then she got a lead part in a play called Burlesque, which she did with Hal Skelly. Mm-hmm. And that was the part that really made her a star on Broadway. And that's when she met Frank Fay, and they got married. Frank Fay was a big comic vaudevillian, and he went out to Hollywood to star in films, and she came along with him. And she, as I was saying before, she didn't have much luck. At first, her first two films didn't do very well. She was getting discouraged. She was ready to to throw in the towel. And her husband said, you should go to this meeting with this director, Frank Capra, because he wants you for a film. And she not really wanted to do it. And so she went there, and she was very sullen and very defensive with Capra. But he saw something there. He responded to her very, very deeply. And really, as he wrote about in his memoir, he fell in love with her. And he fell in love with her in such a way that he wanted to bring her out. He saw there's this beautiful thing here, all this emotion, all this anger, all this sorrow. And he thought, I want to, provide this showcase for her. And the movie was called Ladies of Leisure from 1930. And if you watch that movie now, she's just as vulnerable and natural.
Oh, she's great in that movie. I love that movie.
Yes.
I really
it's beautiful.
Do.
And there's a wonderful close-up. She plays a party girl, and there's that wonderful close-up where the artist, who's her leading man, he takes her false eyelashes off of her. And he wants to strip away all this junk.
Artifice, whatsoever, yeah.
Right. And that's what Capra was doing with her as well. And he puts her in long takes, where he wants her to show what she's made of. And she only was good, he said, on the first take. And she wasn't too trained. It was just, she was like this diamond in the rough.
Right.
And so he got to the point where he knew that if he had to do a second take, she wouldn't be as good. And so he actually rehearsed with the other movies that they did. They did a few movies after Ladies of Leisure. He would rehearse the other actors, without her. And then kind of bring her in. And, like the sound man said, everybody knew that that first take with Stanard was sacred and that we needed to do everything we could to get it on that first take. And so, really, she herself said, Frank Capra, what he did for her is, he made her into a star. And the movies that they made together are still very beautiful.
Yes,
and that's
they
why
are.
I called my book The Miracle Woman, because that was the second movie
that's
they made.
That's a wonderful
together.
Movie, but I just want to briefly hit on this one thing. Mm-hmm. She was still married to Frank Fay, and he was slugging her. He would slap her around.
Right.
In front of people, you were saying, too.
But by the mid-30s, that's it was more secret in the early 30s. But what happened was, I think a lot of people say that A Star is Born, the first A Star is Born, was based very closely on what happened with Barbara Stanwyck and Frank Fay. Because when they went out to Hollywood, he was big and she was not very well known yet.
Yeah.
Her star rose. And his went down. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen a movie with Frank Fay in the lead.
No.
Now, see, part of the problem is that they cast him at Warner Brothers in kind of these ladies' man parts. And that wasn't his real, he was a wisecracking comic.
Yeah,
type.
That wasn't his forte to be Mr. Suave guy.
No, it wasn't at all. And I think Turner Classic Movies sometimes shows a movie he made called God's Gift to Women. And it's supposed to be serious. Like Louise Brooks and Joan Blondell and all these women are just falling all over him, and he isn't right for the part. And so really, it wasn't his fault that his career in films didn't take off. They didn't find the right type of parts for him.
Never
and so
got
he
the
got,
right vehicle for that.
No. And so he got very depressed about that, obviously, and he began to drink very heavily. And then she was, involved with Frank Capra, and they were doing these films together. Now, how far that involvement went, he admitted that he was in love with her. Her own feelings are a little more ambiguous. I think she knew what he was doing for her as a director, and that was very important to her because her work, even at that early stage, was the most important thing to her. She had said that, she really wanted to be the best of all. She kind of humbly said, I know these, it's crazy to think, but this is my goal. She had a high goal, and I think she hit it.
Sure did. I spoke to Victoria Riskin, who was Robert Riskin's daughter, and Faye Ray's daughter. And she wrote a wonderful book, and she also discusses, Capra being in love with her and not knowing herself, she really, her father died pretty young for her, but she didn't know if Barbara return the same feelings. Maybe it was something more of a gratefulness, and that can get kind of misconstrued. But like you say, you know, he was a great mentor, but this guy was Italian and he wanted his babes home, you know, making his meatballs, and Barbara would never be that kind of person.
Right. It was a love. And again, it couldn't be. And they expressed it through these films they made, you know, whereas the domestic side of it, what he wanted. And then also with her, that was, there was never going to be in the cards that they would be together.
We'll never. Meet.
Right. Because when he did marry a woman named Lou, she was the wife, you know, and Stanwyck was never going to be the wife to anybody. That wasn't
She was an actress through and through. So he did the, was that the first, did he do Illicit with her? Did he
do Illicit? Illicit was Archie Mayo. That was 1931. And then, you know, that was shortly after Ladies of Leisure. And then the same year was The Miracle Woman,
which I loved.
A kind of evangelist, kind of Amy Semple McPherson type. And then Forbidden was 32.
I hated that movie. That movie drove me nuts.
That's not the best movie. And she also really hurt her back very badly. She had a horseback scene with Adolf Manju. And he was, you know, Capra was really, really upset about it. And really for the rest of her life, she had bad problems with her back because, I think the horse threw her and fell on her. And so that was kind of a cursed movie. It's a soap opera. It's one of those movies that it seems like there's a different plot every 10, 15 minutes or so.
And Adolf is such a heel, Adolf Manju. What does she see in him? He's a horror story. And then this like...
Well, you know, what did Stanwyck see in Frank Fay? You know, it's kind of, it's just sometimes... Yeah, it's like this. It's this masochistic kind of thing, and I think maybe what's interesting about Forbidden is that we can wonder how much Capra saw of Stanwyck's situation with Frank Fay, and how much of that was being put into this film that they made, which is probably their least successful film. But I do think that was a time of turmoil for both of them. And I think that turmoil is getting expressed in that film in a way that it isn't a successful film, but I think that maybe that partly explains why it isn't successful.
Yeah.
Because they were all over the place.
And it's kind of like, Backstreet in a way. And what was wrong with this miscrippled wife? I mean, she was burning rubber, if you ask me, when she's walking around. I don't know what was wrong with her. Yes, she had like a limp and a thing, and obviously they say, you know, this was her. She couldn't have sex with him, so hence she gave him the freedom to have sex with women, but did not. Don't tell me, and she didn't obviously want him to impregnate one and do all that other stuff. So it's a really schmaltzy soap, and Adolf Manju is totally a creep.
A cad.
Yes.
And Stanwyck herself was married to a man who could be considered a cad. And then they made maybe my favorite of their films is The Bitter Tea of General Yen in 1933.
That is one of my favorite of their films. It is my favorite film that they made together. And it's also one of my favorites that Barbara did. I love this movie.
And I mean, what I love about that movie is I think she's playing, you know, this repressed missionary's daughter.
Right.
And really, if you think about her own background, that couldn't be further from her own background. And so Stanwyck's versatility, her ability to play different types of women, I think she's very flexible. She was able to play that missionary's daughter in such a way that you see her repression, you see what her fantasies are. And, you know, there's this thing that grows between her and the title character that it's sexy, it's ambiguous, it's daring in a lot of ways. And, I think that's really the end of their collaboration for a time.
I basically fell in love with General Yen myself. And, of course, they could not have a real Asian actor at that time to play the role. So it was a Swedish guy. Nils
Hader.
I love him.
I think.
Yeah, it was Nils. I don't know how to pronounce his name, but yeah. She said he was like a marshmallow. She loved working with him. And fascinating, it was the first film that opened at Radio City, and it didn't even last. How long did it stay at Radio City? Because people were protesting.
It didn't stay very long. And I think Capra wrote in his memoir about how he was really, you know, shooting high here. He thought, this is the movie that's going to get me the Academy Award attention. You know, this was his art film. Right, an art film. And he miscalculated. Because, like, we can appreciate it now, but I think at the time, people looked at it and were probably, you know, prejudices of the time and the bigotry of the time. I think people looked at this and they didn't like what it was saying. They didn't like what it, especially the most daring thing in that movie is the dream sequence when her character falls asleep. And suddenly, you know, their character's own bigotry about the general comes out. And with this caricature of him, but then it falls away and suddenly he's the lover. And it's a very psychologically insightful sequence where, you know, he's analyzing the bigotry of her character and how sexual fantasies are underneath it. And, you know, it was too sophisticated for that and too far ahead of its time for that moment. And so it wasn't a success, but it's one of their best movies together.
Wonderful. Walter Connolly was amazing in it. They did actually have Chinese actors, but the one who played.
There was some. Right.
Mei Ling, was that her?
Yes. The female, I can't remember what her name is, but she, I believe, is Asian American.
Right.
So she
was just horrible, but that, I love that movie. I thought it was beautiful. And yeah, you know, showing how, like, look at Auntie M, you know, the great missionary. They're savages. They're animals. They all look alike, you know, Auntie M. And she was supposed to come there and marry this big do-gooder, and before they get married, he has to go rescue children. But she meets Yen earlier, and
she's drawn to him and scared and drawn at the same time.
She give him a handkerchief to wipe the blood or something? And he's shocked.
I think so.
Yeah.
Right. And so they have this thing between them, this kind of contest between them, and it's, you know, again, it's a very sophisticated film. And very beautiful.
And I highly recommend anyone to watch it if you get a chance. It is really, I enjoy it so much. And while acting.
Now, see, that was the point when, and then of course she's doing all these other pre-code films with William Wellman, like Night Nurse and Babyface, and Babyface is really a frightening film. And I think what's interesting about Babyface is that she was brought in with the writers on Babyface and had some input on it, according to Daryl Zanuck, who is the producer. And so I think Babyface is fascinating because I think some of Stanwyck's own philosophy of self-reliance and, you know, toughness and everything, I think it is expressed in Babyface. You know, if you've seen that movie, I'm sure you have. I love that movie. She has this mentor who is telling her, you know,
Mr. Nietzsche.
And saying you must be self-reliant, use men as be a warrior and all this. And of course she has this African-American friend who, yeah, it's like they're in cahoots with each other, yeah, which is also a very daring thing for the time.
It's her BFF. She cheated.
Teresa Harris.
I love Teresa Harris. Name. She's wonderful. Yeah. And, you know, she had to be Barbara's maid when Barbara's moving on up.
It's all a front.
Yes,
you know, they're putting something over on everybody.
And they're friends. She's dressed beautiful. She has furs herself, Chico, and she's living pretty good too.
It's like a partnership, mm-hmm. Right? You know, they come up together.
Yeah, because things that happened to Barbara, I'm sure happened to Chico as well. So.
Right.
You know, that they had each other for protection when they were young. And it's an amazing film. But in there were two things. They cut some stuff out, which was major. They cut the railroad scene, which to me, I was Toledo. That was huge.
Character sleeps with the railroad man so she can get. Yeah, there are certain things that were cut that were found later on. And then I think they played first at Film Forum in Manhattan. So now we have that cut that has the, the scenes that, that had been cut. But it's, and I think some of the her mentor, some of those scenes had been cut as well.
Well, they changed he said. You didn't understand what I said.
Right. Yeah. They have him in dialogue say the exact opposite of
right.
what he was telling
saying
her.
You are not, you didn't understand, and now you are, right. Like polluted with, or whatever.
Now we have the original cut, and, yeah. It's what it is. But then, the production code comes, and she takes a little while to, when 1934, her films decline for a little bit because, they put a straitjacket on everything. Like Gambling Lady is, I think, the first postcode film. And, you think a film called Gambling Lady starring Barbara Stanwyck would be, no, everything is, very repressed, and, all the honesty about things is gone. And, and she's at Warner Brothers, and she wants to get out of, she never signed for long-term contracts with anybody. She would try to, she'd sign, a little, with Columbia, with Warner's, and by the time she was done with the Warner's contract, she was freelance, and she would make deals for not 7 years, or she would say, I'll do three pictures with you, I'll do two pictures with you, and so she had a better way of finding out what scripts were good for her. Now, I think that's why she never really, probably why she didn't win an Academy Award, because the studios voted in blocks.
Right.
And if you weren't signed to a studio, the people were, they basically told people you should vote for so-and-so.
Like Norma Shearer won for The Divorcee.
That, and then also when Louise Reiner won for
Ray
Ziegfeld and The Good Earth.
Awful.
I mean, yes, and Stanwyck was up for Stella Dallas, which, she said, I poured my heart's blood into that. And Greta Garbo was up for Camille.
Yeah.
So Stella Dallas, I think, there are some interesting movies in between. There's one with John Ford called The Plow and the Stars. It's a Sean O'Casey play. That's of interest. But Stella Dallas is the first one after the postcode, that's really a major Stanwyck film.
I want to ask you about one of them, though, still yes. in the pre-code, 10 Cents a Dance, Shopworn. Shopworn is really something else. Auntie M is also a witch in this one. You sure mm-hmm. don't want to go, if there's no place like home, you better stay in Oz, because Auntie M is horrible. She's this horrible
and she,
mother.
Well, she has that wonderful, remember, it's one of those things, I'm going to pay you to get out of town.
Yes.
And the camera just stays on her while she tells them off. And that's one of her best scenes, I think.
Oh, she was wonderful.
Also, just keep the camera on her.
She's learning. Yeah. And this is the total pre-code, and they kind of, no one really... She's reading, I'm up to the E's, and she's up to ejaculate. That's huge in a pre-code film. So you wonder if most people knew what that meant. I don't know.
Well, some people would and some people wouldn't.
Yes.
But, really, Stanwyck pre-code films, even the ones that aren't as good as the really great ones, you really can't go wrong.
No, I love 10 Cents a Dance. Monroe
right.
Owensley is a horror.
Again, yes.
And there's
she dealt with horrors, male horrors on screen and off. It's
and
true.
Then there was Ricardo Cortez, and she had said that he never gave her anything. She said he just gave her cold, dead fish eyes. And you can see that, because Barbara really... When she falls in love with you, she looks at you like she's in love. She's really in love.
Right. And her whole thing really was she's best with a man who is an innocent, like a Gary Cooper
right.
or a Henry Fonda. She's wonderful because she's the worldly wise woman. She's the cynical woman even. And then she meets this man who's beautiful and innocent, and she's touched by the man's innocence. And so that was always with her, the situation that brought out the best in her as far as male-female relations in a movie go.
Can I ask you this? Why do you think mm-hmm. she adopted Dion? Because obviously You know, well, she was not really a mother to Dion, and they had a horrible relationship.
Well, I mean, they had a kind of non-relationship.
Right.
And really, it is known, it was right at the end of, it was one of those horrible, desperate things when a couple has a terrible relationship.
Oh, dear.
And they think, maybe we'll fix it if we can have a child.
How crazy is that, though? How often does
that
work?
Well, it's unfortunate, but, you know, I think it still sometimes happens. It happened a great deal more often then. And
yes.
So they adopted Dion, and almost right away, you know, this was the end of their marriage. Frank Fay was behaving in an outrageous way. And I think actually the end for their marriage was, I think he threw Dion into the swimming pool or something.
Yes.
And then she'd had enough. That was the end. And so, and then there was some great awkwardness with, you know, custody battle. And Frank Fay was, you know, posed outside of the house looking woebegone. Frank Fay was a nightmare.
Yeah.
It really was. So as far as that, that's why it happened. And so, all right. So Dion was her only child. And you have to realize she had no parents when she was a kid.
Right.
She had terrible experiences, really rotten, you know, experiences when she was a kid. And so she didn't know how to be a mother. Dion, I have to be careful about the way I say this. Dion, when he was growing up, he was not. He wasn't very good at, you know, his studies. He wasn't very good. She was someone who, like, and this is kind of the dark side of her. She was a winner. She wanted to achieve. She wanted to excel, and she had to be tough about that. And I think she saw Dion, and she probably saw, you know, these bad memories of this marriage to Frank Fay. You know, and that is, of course, that isn't fair, but to Dion. But I think that if you see, you know, this is a last ditch attempt to try to save this bad marriage. When she married Robert Taylor, said he tried with Dion, you know, like he tried, but they were working constantly.
Right. And he was an afterthought. And also, he was a chubby kid, which was not acceptable
right.
to Barbara either. So
right, and it didn't work. And so really, she just sent him away. And then I think he said they met each other once in the early 50s, and he said he felt like, you know, a fan coming to meet a movie star, and that she was barely anything to him.
That's
and then
sad.
A few years went by, and she cut him off totally when he didn't have, you know, enough money, and he got arrested for selling kind of dirty books to teenagers. And this happened in 1960.
But it was not pedophile stuff, right?
Because
he
was trying to sell dirty books to teenagers, and he got arrested for it. And that was it. When that happened, the iron door came down. She wanted nothing more to do with him. And if you asked her about him, she would just say, oh, he's long gone. And I think if I recall, pictures of him and stuff, I think she just kind of kept them, you know,
out of sight, out of mind. He never existed,
right.
Kind of deal.
And it's a sad situation. It's unfortunate, but I think, really, she was a non-mother more than a bad mother. They shouldn't have adopted the child to begin with.
Right. Yeah. She wasn't a good mother, that's for sure, because she wasn't. But
she didn't understand how to be one.
No.
She had never had a mother.
No.
And her own, as we were saying, her own way of looking at life, I think she saw this kid who was just not doing very well at anything. And then, you know, gets arrested for such an embarrassing thing, you know. But now, see, the thing is, though, it's interesting. I recently watched the Barbara Stanwyck show, which is this anthology show that she had in the early 60s. There's an episode of that show, which aired not long after Dion got arrested, where Stanwyck plays this woman who's trying to return a boy she's adopted because he's deaf.
Oh, wow.
And by the end of the episode, though, the Stanwyck character, you know, says, I'm a horrible person for trying to do such a horrible thing. And I was really taken aback by this episode, because it seemed to me that she was using her own situation in life to kind of like explain that she felt bad about it, that she felt bad that, you know, here's it's like an extreme of like this woman is being so selfish and trying to return and adopt a child that she finds defective in some way. And it's really a fascinating thing if we think about Stanwyck and her own son.
Where do you find her shows?
Well, you know, Amazon Prime had the Barbara Stanwyck show streaming in February anyway. I think it is still streaming.
I'll have to check that out because that would be quite an interesting film episode.
Oh yes. And the episode is called High Tension, and it's from 1961. It was only one season the show lasted. It's toward the end of the season's run, and it's directed by Robert Florey, who's a pretty good director. I would say if you're a Stanwyck fan and you're interested in, particularly in this side of her with the adopted son, that episode is fascinating.
I imagine. So we're on your drama grab bag, Ever in My Heart, Gambling Lady, A Lost Lady, The Secret.
Oh, and I have to say, Ever in My Heart is a very touching movie.
I love
and very
that
good
movie.
But, you
it's
know,
so
one of the
sad.
Most depressing movies of all time.
Oh, my God.
We should say that.
Yes.
It's a tragic film without any relief or
breaks,
any, you know, but it's
too.
Wonderful.
It really
it's wonderful.
Is.
And it's a pre-code. It's one. I mean, there must be 9, 10 pre-code movies.
She did quite a few. A Message, Banjo and Minnie, Always Goodbye. But that movie, and who is the guy that played opposite her? I like him a lot.
In
Always in My Heart. Or Ever in My Heart.
Or Always Goodbye?
Ever in My Heart.
Oh, Otto Kruger.
Right. He was fabulous, too. And you can't, you know, you really understand where he got that whole thing because it was so horrible what he had to deal with in the United States. So it's an amazing, amazing film. And I love it. And then she did the William Wellman ones, like you said, with the rough and tumble William Wellman. And I talked to William Wellman Jr., who was fabulous. He did the podcast and he was great. And his father really admired Barbara Stanwyck and thought she was great. And it's funny that the movies he did, he could do the rough and tumble movies, yet he would do woman's pictures. He directed Star is Born, the first one, Janet
Gaynor. And that's really interesting considering mm-hmm. that everyone thought Star is Born was based on Stanwyck and Frank Fay. And I'm sure he was directing her in films when their marriage was falling apart. So I'm sure he had plenty of time to see exactly what that situation was.
Love this one that you write about, The Purchase Price.
Mm-hmm.
What
That's
the
very
heck is she
movie.
Staying there with this big galoot who's always got a runny nose and is just such a baby? And he's so mad that she slams a door on him on the wedding night. She doesn't even know the guy.
And George Brent.
Right. Yeah. And I absolutely loved Lyle Talbot in this as her married ex-paramour.
Yes, he is in quite a few of her films.
Yes.
You know, unfortunately, by the 50s, he had kind of been reduced to Ed Wood movies.
Yeah.
You know? But when he was younger, he got some good parts at Warner Brothers.
Yeah, he works some great.
But again, I think it's funny, we mention all these things. She deals with lots of shady men in these early days. Lyle Talbot and Monroe Osley, and there's all these very shady men that she has to put up with.
Yes.
You know? Or then in Stella Dallas, it's the opposite. She has to put up with this very stuffy man. And that's such a tragic. Stella Dallas is just as tragic as Ever in My Heart.
Yes, it is very tragic and it breaks your heart. And John Bowles, to me, you know, he's not my favorite actor. And I know a lot of people who come on and they say, well, my grandmothers loved him. He was their favorite. And I go, well, good. I'm glad grannies loved him. But I don't. You know, he's just kind of a stiff.
Well, what's interesting is that he's the leading man in Backstreet. And mm-hmm. he's always playing these absolute jerks, you
yes.
know. Like and there is something unsavory about him.
Fair.
And so I think he's cast in these parts where he's a ruiner of women's lives in films. And I think he comes across that way. It's a Certainly in Stella Dallas, he does that. But so in the middle 30s, though, as we were saying, she does a lot of movies, and you know, they aren't as good as the pre-COVID movies. It takes her a little while to get back, you know, with, I think, with Stella Dallas. There's a few of interest in the middle 30s, but, you know, not as many as pre-COVID. They're all interesting pre-COVID. Yeah. But middle 30s, not as much.
No, and they like the one where she's married to, what's that guy's name? Ugh. She's like a horsewoman.
Oh, Annie Oakley?
No.
Oh, Woman in Red.
Woman in Red. I hated that movie.
That's not a good one. No. And Natasha Garcia is nothing to win a prize on. And now, if you ask me what's her worst movie, I would have to say Red Salute. This movie, have you seen Red Salute?
I have
from
never
35?
Seen it. No. There are some movies here that you've written about that I have never seen.
Red Salute is very unfortunate because it's a kind of screwball comedy, like It Happened One Night. You know, there were a million movies that imitated It Happened One Night, but with a very right-wing political slant. And towards the end of that movie, it gets very, very offensive. And so it's a pretty unsavory item, unfortunately. It was made independently, interestingly enough. A studio didn't produce it. So it's kind of, I think it's floating around in the public domain. It's worth taking a look at. I wish she hadn't made it, though, honestly.
Yeah. But because she did so many great projects. And if we're thinking.
She worked a lot. And I think the thing is, she made all these great movies, but she also made all kinds of interest movies. It might not be great or even good sometimes, but there's still something of interest about the plot, the director, you know, or Edith Head is doing her clothes, you know, it may sometimes that's all you need. So the movies are more than, there's all these elements, and there can be, you can watch one of her films that might not be as good as some of the others, and there might still be something worthwhile. Though Red Salute, the only interesting thing about Red Salute is that it's somewhat offensive. You know, at the end of it, it's this kind of anti-foreigner thing, which is very, very ugly.
And very, very relevant today, unfortunately. You know,
Right.
Everything is old is new again, right? Or maybe it's never been that way. So it's pretty odd.
Well, no, there's always been that element in American society, unfortunately. And you can see it in this movie. The man who wrote the movie, whose name escapes me at the moment, he was this big right winger who was very anti-foreigner. And so he puts in this towards the end of it, there's this kind of, ethnic-looking people are trying to come into the country and say, "Oh, so anyway."
Yeah.
So that's definitely not one of the best. You know, one of the worst that she was in.
But would be your least favorite.
Absolutely, that's at the very bottom. That has to be, because really, you know, there's some that are not very good or whatever, but I think that's at the bottom because that one is actually offensive, unfortunately.
Yeah. So. And she also did a lot of stuff that was, you know, well, later in her career, we'll talk about that. But, you know, in the 30s, she started doing different kind of films. She started doing some, but let's finish with Stella Dallas because I feel so badly for her, and that stupid Barbara O'Neill and her, like you say, her insufferably perfect children, those three boys. Gee whiz, wow. And what a pig he is, you know what I mean? He goes to live with her, and it's true. She and Molly share a bedroom. He doesn't send them any money. He doesn't take them anywhere. But
Her Stanley's character Stella, she makes some mistakes herself.
Oh, she does big time.
Because the thing is, the major mistake she makes is at the beginning of the movie, she pretends to be a different type of person in order to seduce him, in order to seduce the John Bowles character.
Right.
Then once they're married, she drops it and just becomes herself. And she's sort of, I want to go out and have a good time. Loud, doesn't dress well and all that. And he's this, you know, sort of a different class. And so really that was her big mistake. She wanted him. And so she pretended to be someone she wasn't. They get married and then right away she drops it. And so of course he's going to want to run right out the door.
Which he did.
And then, you know, her daughter is going to want to gravitate towards this beautiful home. And as stuffy as they are or whatever, here's this beautiful home. Whereas life with Stella, you know, the only thing Stella has in her favor is that she's her mother and her daughter feels sorry for her.
Right.
And see, the thing is, I mean, yes, that can bind two people together. But if you're an honorable person, you're not going to want to bind someone to you just because they feel sorry for you.
No.
And that's where Stella, she shows that she actually is honorable and she makes up for it by sending her daughter away because she doesn't want her daughter's love on those terms where the daughter is just feeling sorry for her and her daughter is not going to have the opportunities and the life that she could have. With the other woman.
You know, being married and the brothers and Tim Holt and all that stuff. And she's just really, it's heartbreaking. And her hanging around with Edmund certainly doesn't help.
And that's the other thing, because Stella has this trashy friend, Edmund. And the way that I see it, Edmund is a little inappropriate with the daughter.
He is. You know, her slip and he's like there. It's like, get out of there.
Right. And it's kind of, he's the type of person who, oh, it's all in good fun, but he's making her uncomfortable.
Right.
And so if you see Edmund, what's really tragic is that that great scene where Stephen comes home and Stella thinks that they're going to have a nice time together. Then Edmund comes in drunk.
Yeah.
He comes in drunk with the turkey and Stephen sees it and he leaves. And what's tragic is, even though Edmund is very drunk, Edmund realizes what he's done. He realizes that Stella really wanted this and he screwed it up for her. And it breaks my heart. As trashy as Edmund can be, sees what he did and he feels bad about it. Oh, see, that's the sign of a great movie.
Yeah.
Is that it isn't just a one thing or another or good and bad. It's people, they're complicated, they make mistakes. And they're able to deceive them or not, and they behave like people in life, you know. And I think that part meant an awful lot to Stanwyck, and she said she poured her heart's blood into it.
She wanted to be nominated for that. She was very irked that she was not nominated for that role.
Oh no, she was nominated. But
she was nominated.
She was irked that she didn't win.
That's right. I don't blame her. She didn't go though, did she? She didn't go to the awards show.
It was very different then. I'm pretty sure that as far as showing up, I think she did show up to, I think they did like a kind of radio broadcast sort of thing.
Well, who did she lose to?
She lost to Louise Reiner in The Good Earth.
Oh, yes. We were talking about that earlier.
Right.
Louise Reiner did not deserve you know that.
Not over Barbara Stanwyck and Stella Dallas, no. And not over Greta Garbo and Camille.
No, that's really...
Garbo in probably her greatest performance.
I just didn't get that.
And she had just won for the Great Zig Felt. So it was two in a row. But see, the thing is, her career evaporated after getting two in a row. And so it's like the two Oscars cursed her career, and she barely worked after that. So anyway, Stanwyck wanted it, but... You know, it isn't basically important.